Shir is dedicated in memory of Rachel Leah Bas Reb Chaim Tzvi. May her neshama have an aliyah. We're up to page 36 in the Mitzuda edition of Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, Simen Ches, chapter 8, Seif Beis, section 2. Says the Kitzur, V'asur lalechala lishtos, prior to davening Shachris, prior to praying in the morning, one is not allowed to eat or drink, based on a reading of the Pasuk, La Shenemer, as the Pasuk has, as the verse teaches, in the book of Vayikra, Lo Sochlu Al Hadam, not to eat, literally, on the blood, or not to eat anything with blood. So of course, the simple understanding is what the Torah here is prohibiting is eating blood from an animal. But on a secondary level, perhaps, the Gemara explains that Lo Sochlu Al Hadam, our sages teach in the Talmud, is to be understood, Lo Sochlu, do not eat, Kodem Shetispalilu Al Dimchem, prior to praying for your blood, as in prior to davening for your sustenance. Continues the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. V'chal ochel al shosev achar kach mispalel. Anybody who eats and drinks and only afterwards prays, olav ha-kosuv omer, of such an individual the Pasuk is referring to, when it declares v'osi hishlachta acharei gavecha, literally to be read, you have thrown me, you have cast me behind your body, behind your back. But it can also be read, Al Tikre, don't read the Pasuk as only referring to your back literally, but with just a slight change of punctuation, Al Tikre Gavecha Ela Geecha. If you substitute the Vav with an Aleph, so you have cast me aside as a result of your arrogance, that with your arrogance you have tended to your own physical needs prior to acknowledging the source of your sustenance. Whereas it were, Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God says, La'achar shenizgazah, kibul alav malchus shamayim, that this individual, after she has shown, how important and how distinguished they may be, that now they're going to come and daven and acknowledge me, you know what? You take care of yourself, you can do it your own, you don't need me. So it's based on this, that the Rishonim explain, the early authorities explain, that the prohibition of eating and drinking before davening is rooted in arrogance. That by going ahead and tending to one's own physical needs prior to praying, prior to acknowledging the source of one's existence and one's sustenance, so this represents arrogance in the highest form. It's for this reason that we already find in early authorities that when the eating and drinking prior to davening is not rooted in arrogance, for example, one drinks water, so water is not a haughty drink, even the most expensive mineral water might be an exception, but generally drinking water would not be construed as arrogance. Therefore, many of the Rishonim write, and this is the accepted ruling in the Shulchan Aruch, one is allowed to drink water before davening. Similarly, if one is very weak, if one isn't feeling well, and it's necessary to eat and drink in order to be able to have the stamina to daven with at least minimal kavana, with a little bit of concentration, so here too, the authorities rule that one is allowed to partake before davening. Under these circumstances, as we'll see in a few moments in the Ketzer, the Poskim do recommend, the authorities do suggest, that at the very least, one recites the Birkas HaShachar, one recites the Alantilas Yadayim, the Ashe Yotzar, the Birkas HaTorah, and the Birkas HaShachar, the Hanas and Lasech Vivina, prior to eating anything really, any more than water. But if one absolutely has to, so even though one has not yet davened Shemona Esrei, one has not begun the body of the daily Shachris service, so one would nonetheless be allowed to eat if the eating is in order to be able to sustain the individual for the duration of the davening. Of course, if a person is sick and has to take medicine, he can't take medicine in an empty stomach, and waiting a half hour waiting more than a half hour would not be medically recommended. So then, of course, also one would be allowed to have whatever food is necessary prior to davening. But there is a fine line. As we don't say bottoms up, just because a person began to eat, so it doesn't mean that you can eat whatever you want. To the extent where the Kesef Shulchan Aruch rules over here, v'afila l'shtaus kafe yotei im sukar v'chalav, osir, eating or drinking coffee or tea, well, probably drinking, I would imagine, drinking coffee or tea before davening, which may be permissible if a person has to do so. Many specifically are lenient in particular with respect to coffee in order to get a person going. The Sefer Peliyotz, in fact, writes that it's an obligation to drink coffee before davening. So that a person comes to davening awake, that's somewhat debatable. But certainly if one needs to, drinking coffee before davening, the majority of authorities do maintain is acceptable. If you need this to concentrate better on one's prayers. However, says the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, and this opinion is echoed by the Chafetz Chaim in his Mishnah Brura as well, to add milk, to add sugar, to add fancy flavors to your coffee, so that would be prohibited. That would be prohibited, because you'd be hard-pressed to explain why, for medical reasons, you have to add all these different types of items. That's if you, one is only allowed to drink that is minimally necessary, that rather than something that would in any way be construed as arrogance. For some of us, there's a big deal. If you're used to taking your coffee with milk or with milk with sugar, and you're not gonna have your milk or your sugars, you can't even drink your coffee. That's why Rosh Hashanah Zalman Auerbach of blessed memory writes that he thinks that Bizman Hazet today, when many of us always drink coffee with milk with sugar, so just having what one is generally accustomed to would be acceptable. And that's when the Chafetz Chaim and the Mishnah Brura and the Kesef Shulchan Aruch write that having sugar in your coffee is problematic. That's referring to an environment. That's referring to a time when people didn't have the means to, or didn't have the opportunity to always put sugar in their coffee. That was considered to be a luxury. But now, Baruch Hashem, the land of the free and the home of the brave, where there's plenty of sugar to go around, we always put sugar in our coffee. We always put milk in our coffee, many of us. So if that's what you are accustomed to doing, if that's what one generally does, so one's not required to leave out the sugar or to leave out the milk. To go beyond that, and that's to have an extra super duper double espresso with chocolate, with all the different vanilla all the flavorings, so that you, even according to Shlomo Zalman, we're not so spoiled, as you can't say, my minhag is I have a particular flavor from Starbucks, that's always what I have. So for me, that's permissible that before davening. So that's a little bit extreme, but just the basics, and that's normal coffee with milk and with sugar. So even though the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch says one's not supposed to do that before davening, as does the Mishnah Brura, so a strong case can be made that if that's what one generally has, that would be okay. Well, what about, well, to wash, I need some cake to wash the coffee down. So that's too much. That we don't say. To say that you have to eat, because otherwise you can't drink your coffee, that's like the little book if you give a mouse a cookie. Right, the kids' book. Right? There's one thing leads to another. So that already is, there's a limit, even according to Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, as to how far one goes. Just because we're going to let you have coffee, even with milk and even with sugar, does not mean that we're going to sell to allow you to wash it down with cake. So that the authorities do not allow, unless it's really a situation where one absolutely cannot function. So that's not so normal. But that would be an instance in which even more than just drinking coffee would be permissible, which is what the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch now writes and addresses in the continuation. V'ish zaken v'chalosh, an individual who is elderly or is weak by nature, that's who cannot wait till the end of davening, probably not davening during the week, but davening on Shabbos, where a shul might begin at 8:30 or 9 o'clock, and depending how long the rabbi speaks, depending on who's davening for the yamid or the chazan, is easy 2.5-3 hours. So you're not going to get home until, you're not going to be able to eat now until 11:30, 12 o'clock. So under those circumstances, the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch recommends that Bifrat b'Shabbosas v'Yamim Tovim shemarichin harbei, in particular Shabbosas and Yamim Tovim, Shabbos and holidays, in which davening is a little bit longer than during the week. So a person who is weak and can't make it through the end of davening without eating, so guess what? Yoser Tov, says the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, echoing sentiments expressed by earlier authorities, better lahatir lo lispalel shachas beveso benachas v'yikadesh v'yochal ezedavar v'achar kach yelech l'vaisaknes z'yichav libum atzibar betil shachris v'yispal achar kach imohem mosaf. Better to allow him to first the daven by himself in his house at his own pace, after which saying Kiddush, and then going to Shul and finishing up whatever is left. Now this raises a very important question that's relevant for both men and to an even greater extent, women. If one is going to be eating before davening, during the week. So eating before davening during the week, we know you can't do unless it is necessary. Okay, drinking coffee is necessary. Maybe yes, maybe no. But let's assume you're of the category, you're of the type that drinking coffee is necessary. So you're going to be drinking your coffee before davening. That's all fine on a Tuesday. But what about come Shabbos? On Shabbos, we know that in addition to the prohibition against eating before davening, there exists another issue, and that is the prohibition against eating before one recites the Kiddush. When it comes to Friday nights, this prohibition is absolute. As soon as you daven Kabbalah Shabbos, you daven Bayriv, as soon as you bench Lecht for women. So the halacha is, even water is prohibited. Just parenthetically, this is not such a well-known halacha, but the Shulchan Aruch rules that with respect to Havdalah on Saturday night, so that's a little bit different. One is allowed to drink water before making Havdalah, and even though it's dark outside, as you've davened Ma'ariv, if you're waiting for your husband to come home to make Havdalah, you can, or for whatever reason, make Havdalah yourself, and absolutely have to have water before making Havdalah. So even if it's not such an emergency, the halacha is that one is allowed to drink water before Havdalah. Kiddush, that's not the case. Kiddush, once one is obligated to recite the Kiddush, so one is not allowed to drink even water. Which now brings us to Shabbos morning. Shabbos during the day, there is a rabbinic obligation to recite Kiddush, the same way that there's an obligation to recite Kiddush, according to the Torah, on Friday evening. However, Shabbos morning is a little bit different. Whereas Friday night, as soon as you daven, as soon as you accept the Shabbos, the prohibition against eating kicks in. Shabbos morning, the obligation to recite Kiddush, and hence the associated prohibition against eating before Kiddush, only kicks in once a person daven Shachris. In other words, if I'm davening at 9 o'clock in the morning, and I'm now up at 7 o'clock. And again, I'm of the type that does drink coffee before davening, maybe with sugar, maybe without sugar. So on Shabbos morning, since I have not yet davened Shachris, even though you can't eat before Kiddush, so there'd be no obligation under these circumstances to make Kiddush beforehand. Because the only time there's a prohibition against eating before Kiddush is when there's an obligation to recite the Kiddush. And since we assume the obligation of reciting Kiddush Shabbos morning only takes effect, only kicks in after you daven Shachris, mele, if a person has not yet daven Shachris, so whatever is going to be permissible to eat from a eating before davening standpoint is going to be mutter, is going to be permissible for up to do so even without reciting the Kiddush. I was careful, I said the obligation of making Kiddush kicks in after you daven Shachris. So that means you could make Kiddush after Shachris and eat whatever you want before Musaf. So that's not so simple. Now, the halach is that one is yes allowed to eat before Musaf, but not a big meal. Now, once you daven Shachris, you're allowed to make Kiddush and to have a small amount. But one could have cake, the Kiddush Makom Seuda, But to go ahead and to sit down for a full meal before, that's before davening Musaf, so this is something that unless there's a very pressing reason, this is something that the Shulchan Aruch rules one should not do. Let's return though to our basic issue of eating before davening. That's, we mentioned that this halacha, the issue of Kiddush, is important for men and might be even more important, more relevant when it comes to women. And that is as follows. Let's go back to the beginning. The halacha generally, as we know from different sources, is that Torah commandments that are time-generated, time-bound, positive commandments are applied to men and not to women. Who made this up? God. Where does it come from? A whole bunch of psukim. That's why when it comes, let's say, to sukkah or to shofar and a whole bunch of other time-generated mitzvos, collectively known as mitzvos asei shazman grama, the halacha is that although if a woman wants to voluntarily do them, that's fantastic. But for a number of reasons, most notably the pasuk, women are exempt from this set of positive commandments. Normally, when the rabbis come up with new mitzvahs, or when they extend existing Torah commandments, so we generally have a principle that called the tikkun rabbanon ke'en da'oraisa tikkun, that whatever the rabbis establish, they generally try to the greatest extent possible to pattern their new enactment or their new mitzvah after existing parameters established by the Torah. Thus, it would stand to reason, if the rabbis come up with a time-related or time-generated mitzvah, such as davening shachris every single day, davening a shmona esrei, the formal amidah of 19 brachos, a specific text before the end of the fourth hour, this time of year, approximately 10 o'clock or 10:15 in the morning, and to daven the mincha prayer before sunset, and to daven later the ma'ariv shmona esrei, also the 19 brachos. So this would appear to be a time-generated and time-bound mitzvah, and therefore one would imagine that women should be exempt. Nonetheless, the Mishnah teaches us in Maseches Brachos and Daf Chaf that women, nashim, are chayavos, are obligated in tefillah, in prayer. Isn't this a time-generated commandment? Isn't this a rabbinic commandment, perhaps, that should follow the parameters of the Torah's time-generated commandments? Says the Gemara, no, prayer is an exception. What's the reason? Because prayer is rachme. Prayer is our expression of a desire for God to have compassion upon us. And just as men ba'u rachme, just as men require compassion, so certainly women do not require any less. Therefore, explains the Talmud, when the rabbis of the Mishnah tell us that women are obligated in prayer, it is with very strong basis, and this is absolutely the accepted halacha in the Shulchan Aruch, followed by all of us. Question then becomes a historical question, and that is many, many righteous women in Europe and in the Sephardic countries from time immemorial who were very meticulous in all of their observances and raised children and raised grandchildren, all very, very meticulous in observance, and they supported husbands who were also very, very pious. Some of these women did in fact daven, recite the daily Shemana Esrei prayer on a regular basis, and many, many others did not. They would recite a supplication in Yiddish or in Hungarian, in Ladino, in Spanish, in German, sometimes in Hebrew. But many, many righteous women historically over the past several centuries did not necessarily daven the daily Shemona Esrei. And the commentaries address as the exact reason as to why this was the case. To say that all these people were wrong is the height of arrogance. It is also silly. It doesn't make so much sense sociologically, since if one goes back, most of these women were much more pious than many of us today. To say they just ignored the halacha, this wasn't their thing, so that's very wrong. There must be some type of a defense, of a basis, for the fact that historically women did not daven the standard, or many women did not daven the standard Amidah, the standard text of the Shemona Esrei, as the Mishnah would seem to indicate. So what some explain is as follows. When we speak of prayer, so we're right now referring to the Shemona Esrei, to the Amidah, the 19 brachas with which we are familiar. Is there any obligation to pray according to the Torah? So this is the subject of a famous, famous dispute between some of our greatest of medieval authorities. Maimonides, the Rambam, writes in his Mishneh Torah, in his classic Yad Chazaka work, that there is a Torah obligation. We're not talking specifically about women right now. There is a Torah obligation, not rabbinic, but there is a Torah commandment for one to pray on a daily basis. Where is this derived from, says the Rambam? Based on the verse that we recite in the Shema, when God commands, ul'avdo bechal livavchem, to serve Him with all of your heart. So what does that mean? How do you serve God? With the heart. Answers the Talmud, Ezo hi avada shebelev, service of the heart is nothing other than Havayom erzu tefila. Service of the heart is a clear reference to prayer. Thus writes the Rambam, although clearly the text of our prayers and the fact that one's required to pray two times or three times a day and the exact wording and the Zmanim, the latest and earliest times, all of that is rabbinic. But the basic obligation to pray once a day in any language, as long as one makes reference to the greatness of Hashem, anyone praises Hashem, Shevach, Bakasha, one makes a request, and one thanks Hashem, Hodah, in any which language, any which text, one has satisfied their Torah requirement of prayer. Thus, according to the Rambam, if one says, God is great, give me food, thanks so much, so one has just fulfilled their Torah requirement of prayer. The rabbis later on, of course, expanded this obligation to have specific times, specific texts, etc., etc. The Ramban, who was a significantly younger contemporary of the Rambam, Nachmanides, Rabbeinu Moshe ben Nachman, who was a young man at the time the Rambam passed away, cites the position of the Rambam and, with all due respect, disagrees with this opinion. Says the Ramban, I feel that prayer is completely rabbinic, and he has a number of different proof texts for this notion, not really that relevant for us. I feel that prayer is always only rabbinic obligation. It's on a Torah level, on a biblical level, one does not have a daily requirement to pray. Yes, the Chumash tells us in the book of Bamidbar, V'chisavo milchama be'artzechem, should one be beset, God forbid, with war, should one be attacked, al hatzar hatzorer eschem, so then when one is under siege, so what are you going to do? V'arei osem, you're going to blow the chatzotzros, you're going to blow the trumpets and pray to Hashem. Then, says the Ramban, there's a Torah obligation during what he characterizes as an eis tzara. During times of distress, when we're under attack, when somebody is sick, when the state of Israel is at risk, so then one has a Torah obligation to pray. But on a daily basis, when it's same old, so the Ramban maintains the obligation to pray is completely rabbinic. There is no Torah mandate that requires a person to daven on a daily basis. Some point out that the dispute is really a little bit academic at this point, because when was there ever a time in Jewish history there wasn't an Eish Tzara? That's, nobody could raise any money if there would be an Eish Tzara. There's always an Eish Tzara. There are people who always have problems. Be that as it may, come some of the commentators, the later authorities, specifically the Magen Avraham, the classic commentator on the side of the Shulchan Aruch Arach Chaim, and suggests as follows. in defense of all those women who historically did not necessarily daven the complete Shemona Esrei on a regular basis. So says the Magen Avraham, suggests the Magen Avraham, maybe somewhat counterintuitively, they're relying on the Rambam. Well, wait a second. What, the Rambam says that prayer is Torah mandated. The Ramban, Nachman, and he says it's rabbinic. So who's more machmir? Which position is more stringent? Which position takes prayer more seriously? Obviously the Rambam. Okay. So if you tell me the women rely on the Rambam who says prayer is very important, is biblical, not just a rabbinic obligation. So that means they should be more stringent, not less stringent. So says the Magen Avraham, somewhat counterintuitively, no. Let's go back to our original text. We have a Mishnah in Maseches Brachos that teaches us women are obligated in prayer. It explains the Talmud. Why? Because prayer is an exception. Because women require mercy. They have to express, they have to connect with their Creator the same way that men must. What type of prayer is this referring to? So according to the Ramban who maintains, according to Nachmanides who says that the only type of prayer that exists is our Shemona Esrei. There's no Torah obligation on a daily basis to pray. So obviously when the Mishnah says women are obligated in prayer, it means the same prayer as men. There is no other prayer. There's no notion of Torah prayer that the Mishnah possibly could have obligated women in. Whereas if one assumes like the Rambam that this Torah prayer of once a day, any language, any time, Shevach Bakasha Hoda, praise, request, thanks, and then there's also rabbinic prayer, the Shemona Esrei, as we have it. So perhaps when the Mishnah says that women are obligated to pray, that does not refer to the Shemona Esrei, but maybe it's referring to the more limited Torah obligation of prayer. And this, historically, says the Magen Avraham, is what women relied upon. The view of the Rambam, well, the Rambam is more stringent. No, the Rambam does take tefillah, prayer more seriously, in the sense that according to him there's a biblical daily commandment, but because there exists a biblical daily commandment, one has the option of saying that's what the Mishnah is referring to and not the later rabbinic Shemona Esrei with which we are all familiar. Why is this relevant to eating before davening? Because as follows, if a woman. Halacha l'maisa. What does one do? So, practically, there is even today a divergence of opinion exactly what women should be doing. Some are adamant that women have the right to follow the practice of their great-great-grandmothers, if that indeed was the practice, of on a daily basis fulfilling their prayer obligation with a bakasha, with praising Hashem, with making a request and thanking Hashem. And one need not recite the formal Shemona Esrei text. Others maintain that no, when the Mishnah says women are obligated in prayer, it doesn't just mean the Torah obligation, it means the regular Shemona Esrei. And incidentally, keep in mind that even according to the Rambam, it could be that when the Mishnah says women have to pray, it means regular Shemona Esrei. Meaning all the Magen Avraham explains is that according to the Rambam, you have the possibility of defending the practice of not saying Shemona Esrei, because maybe that's what the Mishnah means. Whereas according to the Ramban, that's not even a possibility. But we haven't proven that according to the Rambam, the Mishnah is only referring to the Torah obligation and not the full rabbinic obligation. So there is a very strong case to be made that women should be davening Shemona Esrei every single day, Shachris in the morning, before the end of the fourth hour, the same way that men do. Women should also be davening Shemona Esrei every single day, the Amidah, before sunset, the Daven Mincha, the same way that men do. With respect to Ma'ariv, with respect to the third Shemona Esrei that's recited after the stars come out, with respect to Ma'ariv, Sahir, the consensus among the authorities is that women have no obligation according to anybody. The rationale being that even men, back in the day, the authorities ruled in accordance with an opinion in the Talmud who maintains that davening Shemona Esrei from Ma'ariv, not saying Shema at night, but davening the Shemona Esrei is optional. There is an opinion, kids in high school love this, there is an opinion that says that Ma'ariv is Rishos, that Tfilas Arv is Rishos. So even though men have now today do daven ma'ariv. That's because, as the Rif writes in the back of the Gemara, we have subsequently accepted this arvis, the ma'ariv shman asrei, as mandatory, as obligatory. We've accepted it upon ourselves, like so many other menhagim. Lots of things we accept upon ourselves that were not originally binding. When, though, we accepted upon ourselves, it was only men that accepted upon themselves. We never accepted upon them ourselves this obligation for women. Therefore, when it comes to women davening, shachris and mincha, so there is a strong group of authorities that maintains women should be davening every single day, the morning and afternoon Shmona Esrei, but the Ma'ariv Shmona Esrei is not in any way required, because even for men it was originally optional until it was accepted by the community, and that Kabbalah, that acceptance, did not extend at the time to women. When it comes to eating before davening, so Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach writes, and I think this is obvious, the prohibition applies to women just as it does men. I sometimes get the sense that women are a little bit more lenient in this regard. So again, if it's because they're weaker, or they've been up with the kids all night, or they've been, husbands have to help with that. My wife might watch this one day. So if in fact they're weaker and they've been nursing or they're whatever the case may be, so then of course you need no special heter to eat before davening. That's that we said anybody would be allowed to partake in food or certainly in drink if necessary prior to davening. But just in general, women just don't feel the prohibition applies, so that's wrong. That's the prohibition against eating before davening applies to women, just as much as it applies to men. The question becomes, though, depending on which version of the obligation of women davening, depending on which version you are to follow, that's, do you assume that you're supposed to be davening every single day to Shmon Esrei, or do you assume you just have to say, to make a bakasha? So that obviously would very much influence the nature of the prohibition, meaning that do you have to wait until you daven shachar shmona esrei to eat, or do you have to, as long as you say moda ani and you make a request, you say the birkas hashachar, which certainly contains praise of God and requests and thanks, so right away women would be allowed to eat. This is especially relevant when it comes to Shabbos for the following reason. As we said, that if a person gets up before Shacharis, a man, let's say, easy case, and he wants to have coffee before going to shul, so assuming that he is among the category, among the type of person who's allowed to have coffee before davening, which is a lot of people, maybe everybody, so the halacha would be he can have that coffee without having to make Kiddush. Why is that? Because the prohibition against eating before Kiddush only kicks in once there's an obligation to recite the Kiddush. If there's an obligation to recite Kiddush, there's no prohibition against eating before Kiddush. But let's say you don't plan on davening shachris. So when would that ever happen? Well, I don't know. How about a woman? A woman who follows the practice of her great-great-grandmother that does not daven the regular Shabbos, the regular shachris shmona esrei. So a case can be made that even if you're going to be saying some bakasha, some tchina later on, that might not be enough to assume that the obligation of Kiddush kicks in once you make that bakasha. It could be that a person who doesn't plan on davening the regular Shmona Esrei, for whatever reason, again, for better, for worse, so such an individual would not be allowed to eat before some type of davening without first reciting the Kiddush. So bottom line, if a person plans on davening the Shachris Shmona Esrei, so then, whatever is permissible to eat before davening, that's however much you need is permissible, even if one does not recite Kiddush, one need not recite Kiddush before davening, whereas if a person, for whatever reason, whether you're just a man who doesn't care, or whether you're a woman who follows the practice of your great-great-grandmother and does not plan on davening the Shachar Shmona Esrei, so the halacha would be, perhaps, that one should be reciting Kiddush before, and that's before partaking in any food prior to whatever davening you plan on reciting. The truth is, it's not so complicated. The truth is that if you don't plan a davening Shemoneh Esrei, so how much? So just to follow the view, just to be yotzei with the Rambam's Torah davening, so that's very easy. So Modani, you're thanking Hashem, you praise Hashem, make a request, that doesn't take so much. So that's probably an easy way where if one can avoid this shaila, this question in halacha. Just as an aside, not related to eating before davening, many women come to shul a little bit later on Shabbos morning, and that's fantastic. Baruch Hashem, they take care of their children, they make sure the husbands are up on time. So the question becomes as follows: when one walks into shul during Musaf, so you're supposed to daven Shachar, so daven Musaf. So not so simple. A very strong case could be made, and I don't know if this is what women do, but probably the halacha is that women should be davening Shachris. As while the tzibur, while the congregation is davening Musaf, so maybe the women should be davening Shachris for a couple of reasons. Number one, even if you want to daven, you want to do both. You're going to first. So there is a dispute among the authorities as to what comes first: you first daven Musaf with the tzibur, and then daven Shachris, or vice versa. That's halacha lemaisa. Practically, many follow the opinion that this for both men and for women. If a man comes in very late, many follow the opinion that you first daven Shachris and then Musaf. Even though the congregation, the tzibur, is davening Musaf, you daven Shachris. This is a dispute between Rabbi Yitzchak HaKhanan Spector and Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, Zechronim Levracha. That's with respect to the men. With respect to women, there's an additional reason why one should be davening Shachris rather than Musaf, and that is that it could very well be that women are obligated, as we explained, according to many, are obligated to daven the regular Shabbos Shemoneh Esrei, right? And do not have an obligation to daven Musaf. Why do they have to daven Shachris? Well, that's easy. That's because the Mishnah says women are obligated in Tefillah, and we said that for sure, certainly according to the Ramban, that means the regular Shemoneh Esrei, right? And even according to the Rambam, it can mean that. It doesn't have to, but it can be. With respect, however, to Musaf, Rabbi Akiva Eger, one of the giants of the 18th, early 19th century, Rabbi Akiva Eger writes in his commentary to the Shulchan Aruch, citing earlier sources, it could be that, strictly speaking, women are not obligated to daven Musaf. Why are they not obligated to daven Musaf? So the answer is as follows. We normally, when one davens Shachris or Mincha, so that prayer is purely an expression of a desire for compassion, a connection between us and Hashem, when there is also an element of sacrificial service. Namely, that the Gemara tells us, the Talmud teaches, that Shachris corresponds to the morning offering in the Beis HaMikdash, Mincha to the afternoon offering, and then Ma'ariv to the burning of the leftover sacrifices, the parts of the sacrifice, the Chalom Vevarim, from the previous day. When it comes to Musaf, so Musaf, the Musaf prayer is not rachamim at all. The Musaf prayer strictly corresponds to a sacrifice. And thus, some authorities suggest that being that women did not participate in this particular karban, how do I know that? Because they didn't contribute the half shekel coins. They didn't have an obligation to contribute the half shekel coins. So too, being that Musaf is strictly karban associated and not rachamim associated, so therefore the halacha would be that women do not have to daven Musaf. Do we paskin this way? Is this the halacha? Maybe yes, maybe no. I emphasize that certainly women absolutely have the right to daven Musaf, but do they absolutely have to do so? So that depends who you ask. That being said, the point is as follows. If you have two things, one thing you have to do, you're obligated to do according to many authorities, according to most authorities. Maybe we don't do it because we justify the practice of our great-great-grandmothers. and then you have something else that very likely you don't have an obligation to do. So obviously that you're required to do should take precedence over something that is optional. So that's why when it comes to women, if a woman is going to be davening either shachris or musaf, certainly she absolutely should be davening the shachris shmona esrei. She wants to daven the musaf afterwards, that's her business. But certainly a woman should be davening the shachris shmona esrei over the musaf shmona esrei.